Hello, everyone. Come on in. Hi. This is the How to Feel the Heart Stuff Without Eating call for the month. I am Coach Kathy. I've done a lot of nervous system training, nervous system work. I've done a lot of feeling study, a lot of work on understanding my own feelings and helping you understand yours. So, the more attention we give to our feelings and what's going on in the inside, the less we need to distract from them. The less we, the more we understand about ourselves, the less we need to, hide from it, right? To feel better about it. So, one of the ways I was thinking about this. I was thinking about how am I going to talk to you at the beginning of this call. As I started reading my favorite Instagram feed, which is called Good Neuroscience. Good Neuroscience, all one word. It always has the most amazing scientific ways that some of the things we teach in OBS actually explain and work out for us. And I came across a post about journaling. And so I thought, while you're trying to decide whether or not you're going to raise your hand tonight and get coached by me and talk about feelings or what's bothering you or why you're eating, I thought I would read to you a little bit about what I learned about journaling. And I said, yes, read to you because I can't teach it this good. So I put it in a document and I'm going to read it to you. So are you ready? You ready to hear about journaling? Does anybody, first of all, let me ask this question. Does anybody here like to journal? If you like to journal, give me a thumbs up. Oh, Dawn says yes. Yes, I like to. If you are not a fan of journaling, tell me that too. Okay. So I am, Mary Jo is a work in progress. Awesome. Good to know. I'm a good journaler. When I take the time to do it, I am not a good journaler to just sit down and decide I'm going to write all day long. Kim is committed to doing it this year. That's amazing. Gail says I'd like to, but I haven't started. I try, but it's not natural at all. Good. This is all really good to know because I think what I'm going to tell you about journaling is going to turn your head just a little bit. Okay, so you ready? Let's do this. So here's what I learned today. Brain imaging studies show that writing about your emotions can calm the part of your brain called the amygdala. And that's the part that detects threats and triggers stress responses. So the amygdala sits in the very middle part of your brain. It's about the size of a bean. It's just really, really small, and it is your threat detector. Okay? So when you write about something that's painful or emotional, you're getting it out of your head and onto paper. And this creates mental distance between, it creates mental distance and reduces the mental load of holding on to those thoughts. Writing activates several brain regions at once, including areas responsible for memory, language, and decision making. This helps your brain organize experiences and can make it easier to reflect on difficult situations in a new way. Even naming or labeling your emotions has measurable effects. Putting words to what you feel lowers activity in the amygdala, that threat detector, and increases activity in the prefrontal cortex, which is right up here. That part of your brain responsible for planning, reasoning, and problem solving. That's your thinking brain. So I'm going to say that again, putting words to what you feel, writing down about your emotions, lowers your threat response and brings the thinking brain back online. How about that, right? This shift helps you move from an automatic emotional reactions to more thoughtful responses. Instead of being overwhelmed by feelings, you begin to notice them and decide what to do next. Even making a simple to-do list activates brain regions involved in reasoning and decision making. Getting thoughts out of your head and onto paper can help you feel more focused and less scattered and overwhelmed. Interesting, right? There's more. Writing by hand adds an additional benefit. It requires more coordination than typing, which naturally slows your thinking and gives your brain more time to process information. Corinne used to teach this a long time ago when she taught more about journaling. She would talk about how writing slows your brain down more than typing or speaking. And y'all, you don't need to write pages and pages. Brief notes about what happened, what you're feeling, or what you're planning can reduce overthinking. Anybody here an overthinker like me? Overthinking is that mental loop that keeps us in the same thoughts, repeating over and over. Think about taking time to write before you react. When strong emotions show up, put them on paper first. Putting them on paper first can help you pause, reflect, and respond more clearly. Here's another thing, and I often have my clients do this. You can also write letters to people that you never sent. Expressing your thoughts directly to a person or a situation can help you process emotions without worrying about someone else's reaction. Interesting, right? So your journal and entries, letters, even simple lists aren't just words on paper. They're signs that your brain is processing, adapting, and regulating itself. If overthinking keeps you stuck in your head, writing can help break that cycle. So I thought that was fascinating. I really, really did. And I have, has anyone experienced writing out about a problem? And by the time you're finished, you've solved the problem or you've given yourself options. I've done that. I've written, I was journaling one time. Somebody made me really mad. I mean, I was like really hurt about something that they had said to me. And I was writing about it and how rude they were and blah, blah, blah. And by the end of that, by the end of my journal entry, I'd said, well, you know, they were probably having a bad day. That's what slowing down your brain enough to write about something can do for you. It can actually help you move to the edge of a problem or to the end of a problem or an emotion or normalize what you're feeling if you slow down enough to write. I very often have my clients write me stories, tell me stories. I was meeting with someone today who's going through some pretty significant grief. And I told her, I said, I just want you to write me stories about him. Just write me some stories about him. Let's process through what you're thinking and how you're feeling and give yourself permission to feel those things through the stories you tell. So that's what I have to say about journaling. Pretty interesting stuff, I think. Pretty interesting stuff. Now, there are no hands raised. So is it going to be a short call if you don't, if nobody wants to get coached? Oh, yay. Allison wants to get coached. Amazing. Rachel loves these ideas. Good. Good. One of the things I often do too, when we're talking, think I got another hand. Good. When we're, so I'm going to finish my thought while I'm calling up Allison. One of the things I often have my clients do when we were talking about writing a letter. Sometimes I have them write a letter to someone that's already passed away. You know, if they had a significant loss or a surprising loss, sometimes it helps close the loop to write a letter in that way too. So it's very interesting stuff. Allison, you're still muted.
Oh yeah, hi.
Hi.
Remember, you're ready. I was waiting for you to finish. So yeah, thanks. I guess if no one else is going. So I am on currently a leave of absence from work because my nervous system kind of just gave out on me. Just like overwhelming stress. Depression came back. Sorry.
It's okay.
Yeah, grief. That was interesting what you said about grief. I think I'm gonna try that journaling. And just work, just lots and lots of changes at work. And yeah, like I felt like it's hard to describe it when your nervous system like totally goes out, but it felt like it was fried. Like I was over capacity for so long. I just couldn't do anything else. And so I'm working. I have a therapist and I have a doctor who's giving me meds. So I'm doing all the things.
Good.
But yeah, I'm scared to go back. That is just going to start all over again. Like I want to use these 5 weeks to effectively rest and heal myself. I was watching your videos on the video on the different types of rest. Like, how can I maximize the time to heal? not just through the medication, the therapy, but just like actually like my thoughts. I love journaling. Any journal prompts, I'll do it. Or homework. But yeah, that's what I really need right now. I don't want to go back and become totally overwhelmed again.
Okay. So, how many more weeks do you have until you go back?
This is only my second day of leave, and I have 5 weeks.
Good. So, you have 5 weeks. You have 5 weeks to let the medication take hold, to do some journaling, to start practicing different types of things that are going to help your nervous system settle. And if you do those over time, your nervous system will settle quite a bit, right?
Hope
I'm going to give
so.
you a journal prompt. I'm going to give you a
Okay.
journal prompt. So if you ever need anyone on this call ever needs to know where to start journaling, this is what you do. You say, "Today I feel," and name the emotion, and here's why. Okay? And just write.
Okay,
So
I have a lot to write.
so just pick one, pick the most, up in your face one. So which one would that be today? Today I feel
Probably sad.
sad, and here's why. And then you would write about the sadness. Okay. Do you want to talk about the sadness here, or do you want to write about it on your own? Oh, I love that. Do y'all see what she just did? Such a sweet,
No, sorry.
loving gesture. Yeah. So
Yeah.
let's just do that. Just put your hands there and just take a minute and just settle. Your feet on the floor, feet flat on the floor. Hand on your heart. Just lengthen your breath a little bit. Lower your shoulders. I see your shoulders are all up there by your neck, right? Lower them down, slouch a little bit. Give your body some ease. Okay.
Yeah, that helps. Thank you.
Better? Okay.
Yeah, no, I think a lot of it, I think the grief, it's mostly grief from a late ADHD diagnosis, which brought up a lot of trauma from my childhood.
Glad you have a therapist.
Yes. I'm seeing her. Yeah.
Yeah. And they're helping you with the trauma from the childhood. Okay.
Yes, it's a lot. It's
Well,
a
because
lot to unpack.
what we know about trauma is that it's a memory that's always stored, and just like happy memories, traumatic memories are stored. And just like happy memories, they can be triggered back into your thinking brain. Right.
Definitely.
So I'm glad you're seeing a therapist that can help you work through some of the trauma and hopefully can help you. Are they helping you with what triggers the trauma as well?
Yeah, I think part of it is my new director at my job. And her actually was coached by Corinne a few weeks ago, and she gave me some tips that I'll use when I go back to kind of help position myself in that my role under her now. But her personality, some of it, and just how she leads, it just like she terrifies me, just like my mother used to.
So I'm glad Corinne worked with you on that. I don't want to rehash it or re-trigger you or do any of that right now, okay?
Yeah.
But what I can do, what I think would be really good work for us to do, is talk about how you can care for yourself over these 5 weeks so that you're ready to go back,
Yeah.
aside from therapy and medication, okay? How do you feel about meditation?
Well, I do this chanting. I'm a Buddhist, so that's kind of a form of meditation, but the meditation, I have the Calm app. I mentioned I have ADHD. Meditation and ADHD, they do help, but it's like really, really hard to do it. But
What
if
about
it will help me,
stories? What about
what about
guided
what?
meditations? Can you do guided
Oh, yeah.
meditations? Yeah.
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 I have those on the app. They should be on the
Girl,
Calm
I'm
app.
not I've never been tested. I don't think I have ADHD. Maybe I do. And I cannot silently meditate. My brain just doesn't know. I just my brain's too active. There's too much going on in my world. But a guided meditation, like some of the ones that I have you heard that some of the ones that I've dropped in the 365 on Wednesdays, something like that where I can close my eyes and visualize and think about it. That's definitely something that I can do and something that that feels good to me.
Okay.
You can do some research if you want, but there are really great benefits to a daily meditation. If you can eke out 5 or 10 minutes a day, you're going to feel the benefits of the meditation will help you throughout the day. Okay. It's like one of
Okay.
those, it's like you're depositing into a savings account of amazingness. If you can think about meditating 5 to 10 minutes in the morning. So that would be something I would suggest to you. You meditate 5 minutes tomorrow morning is probably not, you're probably going to be going, I don't know what Kathy was thinking because I feel the same as I do. It's a practice. Meditation, like yoga, like anything else, is a practice. Okay. It also gives your brain rest, gives your brain one of those,
Yeah, that's what I need.
rest. Okay. Do you tend toward high energy or low energy when you're dysregulated?
Dysregulated, probably high energy.
Yeah, you came to this call, even though you said sad, you came to the call high energy. You know how I could tell? Your breath was very choppy. Okay. So when you notice that, when you notice your breath getting really short, that what you did is exactly what you need to do. Hand on your heart, close your eyes, and concentrate on longer breaths. Okay. And then releasing any tension that you have in your body will help release tension overall, will help release stress overall. Okay. Those are the things I would practice as you go through the next few weeks, is noticing when you begin to add energy, when you begin to move off of home base, when you're starting to get agitated, and seeing what can I do? What can I do to either stop the increase in agitation or to bring myself down a little bit? I don't know that you're going to be able to fix it 100% every time. I don't think I can. Okay. Because I tend to run, like you, I tend to run a little hot. I tend to run a little anxious. But what I can do is I can prevent myself from getting so out of whack that I become, totally into survival mode. So I can keep logical brain online while I'm still feeling a little bit anxious. All right. And that's what I would hope for you, is that you can prevent yourself from getting really dysregulated if you notice the energy building and come back in and hand on heart, concentrate on your breathing, release tension.
Is that what you, I'm guessing what happened when I was, why I burned out? It's because I was just always above,
Yeah.
and my body just like fried.
Yeah. So and I've done the same thing. I'm just going to be honest. And I bet there's other people here that have experienced burnout. Your body does not like a constant state of dysregulation. It sees it as a threat. It sees it as something wrong. Okay. Something is very wrong in your world if you are always way above home base. Okay. And your body always wants to fix that. It always wants to have you regulated. So it's going to offer you things like running away or fighting back or going into some kind of protective freeze, right? That's what it's gonna, that reaction is gonna happen. And as that reaction happens, your body's gonna try, that's gonna put it into protective mode. Your body's gonna try to do things that are gonna help you. When I am a, I don't like horror movies. Okay. Hearing the music just totally sets my teeth on edge. I can't do it. Okay. I find myself, it's really funny, if there's one on the TV and the music starts to escalate, I find myself walking out the room going, wait, I thought I was watching a movie. It's like it automatically happens. That's a flight response. Okay. So probably what was happening, were you a flyer? Did you flight? Did you
Or freeze.
or freeze? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a freezer too. I'm good at the freeze. And freeze, for anybody who doesn't know, means it's like your brain is going 100 miles an hour, but you can't get words to come out your mouth. Right?
Interesting.
I would freeze in meetings. Christy Fawns. Yeah. I
Oh,
would
I do
freeze.
that too.
And fawning's another interesting one. that's where you you're very you're it's like a combination of above and below. You want so badly to feel safe that you'll do anything for that person so they'll like you at your own expense. Okay. It's like people pleasing, to the nth degree. You totally disregard anything you need just so that other person will, be happy with you. And, that just cycles out because we can't make someone happy with us, right? That's their decision. So anyway, all that said is if you notice those reactions in yourself, you're probably in a super protective mode, survival instinct, which means your body has determined that there's a big threat. Okay? Now, one of the other tools I'll give you is trying to notice when you have a threat response like that to tell you that your amygdala, that little threat detector I was talking about, it doesn't know the difference between a real threat and a perceived threat. Okay. So a real threat is, like an earthquake or a guy at your front door with a machete, right? A perceived threat is a horror movie with the music escalating or a boss who gives you a sideways glance and says, "Are you sure you want to do that?" That's a perceived threat. That's not a real threat. So being able to talk to yourself about the difference more often can also help you mitigate the threat.
But talking like journaling too. Okay. Interesting.
Interesting
Okay.
stuff.
Yeah.
Interesting stuff.
I hadn't
So
thought
you
to do
said
that.
you've been on the nervous system resource page?
Yeah.
Okay.
I have it up now. Yeah. A
Okay,
lot of great
good.
stuff on here.
Anything you can do in this next few weeks to practice grounding and to
Oh
practice
yeah, that my
safety,
therapist gets those. Yeah.
are going to be really good things for you. And when I say grounding, I mean that can be as easy as feet on the floor, hands on your legs, just feeling the support of the earth underneath you. Can be as simple as grounding. And that in itself connects you back to yourself because you're thinking about how's my body feel? Am I supported? Okay.
Okay.
Does all that help?
Yeah, I know that's really helpful. Thank you. Thanks so much. I really appreciate
You're welcome. You're welcome. I wish you the best. If you need anything, hit me up and ask
it.
coaches. Okay.
Yeah, I probably will. I'll probably be using that too. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Thanks, you too.
Okay, good nervous system talk. Julie, you're next. Then Allison, another Allison. Julie. Oh, you are almost here. Hit that video button again.
There
There
we
you
go.
are. Hi.
Hi. My story is very similar to Allison.
Okay.
I'm on a leave of absence from work
Oh, it's a leave of absence from work, Dad.
due to anxiety and depression, and kind of, I was having a hard time doing my work, and very seriously considering finding another job. I've been there for 43 years.
Wow. How do you think finding another job is going to help?
Because they don't want me there anymore.
How do you know that?
Because they told me that.
Okay. Well, that seems very clear.
Even told me they'd help me find a job.
Beautiful. But what, did you put them to work?
Yet. Not yet. I just don't know. I have no idea what I want to do. And after being there, I've grown up there. I've left twice and gone back. And just having a really difficult time.
Okay. What, tell me, you said you've grown up there. So that's the place you know.
Right. I was 19 when I started
So you
working
were
there.
19 when you started, and thinking of going somewhere else is a change.
It scares the death
Of
out of
course.
me.
So did you know that your amygdala, that's the word of the call, your amygdala Doesn't like change. It sees it as a threat,
Yes.
right?
Yes.
So let's ask your logical brain, not your amygdala, is this change actually a threat or not?
Depends on how you see it.
Okay, give me both sides.
It would be nice if I could have a better commute into work and not spend 3 hours on the road.
Check. Yes.
But I don't feel I can make the money that I was making there.
How much money are you spending in gas?
That's about $50 a week.
Okay. Something to think about, right?
It is absolutely. That is one thing I have thought about.
So, aside from that, do you know that you would lose pay?
But what I've looked at, yes.
From what you've looked at.
Yes.
Okay. But you haven't.
I haven't done it all, but I also know that I live in Massachusetts. The South Shore of Boston doesn't pay the way Boston proper does, and I work in Boston proper. Well, I
Okay.
work in Cambridge, but it's considered a Boston hospital.
Okay. So this is where you check in with yourself. And you ask yourself, what's the most important thing here? Is it the pay? Is it my anxiety? Is it my commute? What you have an opportunity now to create through this change that you're looking forward from. Okay. So the change is going to be scary because it's change. But the other side of change is, what does Julie want to create? Does she want to still work in a hospital? Does she want to do something more local? Does she want to go down to the Target and fold clothes? Does she want to go down to the Starbucks and make coffee?
I want to go to the bakery and fill cannolis.
Do you want to go to the bakery and fill cannolis? What? So this is where, you check in with yourself. And of course, I know money is always something that we have to think about because we have bills to pay. But is that the most important thing? Or is it your health, your ability to get up and go to work, how you perceive the world, your nervous system, your threat detector, what I think these are the things that you consider as you think about, what am I going to create with this? Tell me what's wrong with what I'm thinking.
I'm just worried about the financial piece.
Okay.
I don't know if I can pay my bills if I
Okay.
could take a job down here. Right now, we've had to do a lot of work on the house and we're very in debt.
How would you know if you could pay your bills?
The budget.
Yeah. What else?
If I paid them.
How would you know if you could pay your bills?
I have a salary in mind that would allow me to pay my bills.
Okay. So if you know that you have this salary that you need to meet, you're probably not going to take anything that's less than that salary unless you're able to supplement that salary, right? So that's the certainty that you create that helps you feel better about the change, is you set yourself a bar, right? I know I have to make at least this amount of money. Okay. Have you decided what that number is?
Yes.
Is it different from what you make now?
Yes.
Okay, good. Right?
It is less.
So that's good. So you've set your bar. That's the certainty that you create. Now the other things get to come into play. The commute, the type of work, the people that you work with, whatever it is that this new job situation creates for you. Okay. And you can do this work on your own, or you can go back to the job that says we'll help you find something and say, that's great. I'm all in. You got to meet this number. And oh, by the way, I would like this, and I would like this, and I would like this. So how can you help me? This is Julie taking control of the experience that you want to create. And when you take control, guess what's not happening?
They're not controlling me.
Right? And you're not anxious about what ifs or what's going to happen or, creating doomsday scenarios and not being able to pay your bills because you are keeping some of that control, and control feels safe.
It does.
Right?
I don't like to be out of control.
None of us do. None of us do. We all like control. We like simplicity. We like clarity. We like step-by-step processes because it tells us exactly what we need to know. So as you go through this change, you need to grab a hold of those places where you can experience those things. And that will help you stay settled, don't you think? Yeah.
I mean, I'm better than I was 2 weeks ago, but you said a lot of your like hand on my hat, and I started doing active praying.
Really? If that settles you, I'm all in on the praying. The other thing I do when it comes to anxiety is I personify it. So what I mean by that is I'll listen to what I'm thinking and I'll tell myself that's my anxiety voice. That doesn't have to be the true voice. That's me worrying. Now, logical Kathy over here remembers this in response to anxiety voice. Okay. And when and I actually picked that up, you might think about this book. I picked that up out of a book by Martha Beck called, I want to give you the right term, Beyond Anxiety.
Oh, I think I
Right?
might have that book.
You might have that book. She calls it her anxiety creature. I don't like the word creature. I just want to call, creature. To me, that makes it negative. I think a lot of times my anxiety voice is trying to protect me. It's trying to help me prepare, even though it's a little misguided and it gets me energetically off balance. I think it's part of my protection mechanism. So I don't want to treat it negatively. I just want to be able to evaluate it. So when I'm able to kind of separate logic from anxiety, it really helps me a lot. Does that sound like something you'd be able to do?
I think so.
Yeah. So I would practice that some as you go through your leave of absence and then back to work. I would practice how you can go back to work with control and clarity so that you can create the experience that you want to create in your next job.
Thank you.
That sound okay?
It sounds great.
All right. You know where to find me if you need me. Okay.
Thanks.
All righty. Bye. Allison, you're next, then Lori. Here she comes. Y'all are very chatty tonight. That's interesting. Allison, video. Perfect. Hi.
Hello. So first, let me start by saying super nervous. I've only ever done one coaching call before, and I find that my thoughts can get a little bit scattered. So maybe just redirect me if needed.
I will bring you back if I need
Okay.
you.
I am
Okay.
also on a leave of absence from work, but
Oh my gosh, this is amazing.
I had surgery 2 weeks ago.
Oh,
So
okay. All is
I
well.
am
You're healing well.
All is well. I am healing well. I am set to go back in 2 weeks
Okay.
and looking forward to it.
Good. Okay.
I did have a late in life diagnosis of ADHD, which did help to explain a lot of the like my responses and reactions and the way I behaved growing up. Looking back, I think, okay, this explains it all.
Now I get me. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think like two of my nephews have it as well. Their moms are very involved now in how to like research and help them, and but I didn't have that growing up. 50 years ago or 40 years ago when I was in school, there wasn't like girls didn't have ADHD. It was boys who did poor in school. So being able to say to them now, rejection sensitivity dysphoria is probably one of my biggest issues. And that explains so much of my reaction related to the ADHD. And I'm not trying to excuse my behavior, but trying to help them help explain. So here's my thing. My sisters, one of them is 3 years younger than me, and the next one is 13 years younger. So there's 10 years between them. They are both married and have two children each. I am not married. I have no kids. We talk really big for the world about how we're really close, and I don't know that I would agree with that. They are very close. I have always been on the outside of that group and really struggle with feeling, why me? What's wrong with me? Why am I never included in anything? The number of times I've said to people, I don't have to be part of a couple to be included in something. If the men don't mind that there is one less man, then why does it matter if I'm not bringing? I can bring a male friend along if that makes you feel more comfortable me being there, but I'm not married by choice. I ended a relationship because I did not want to get married, not because I've never had the chance. So I'm comfortable with that, but I never get included in stuff. If we have a family games day, of course I'm there and there's always lots of fun. But I constantly hear from my nephews, oh, we got together at, Auntie Jessica's house, and the eight of them, as in the two couples and their four kids, had a games night, or, the two couples had a games night, or the two couples had dinner. And I just, like, I hear about it and I think, okay, I can understand that you don't need to invite me to every single thing that you guys do, but I'm never invited to anything, not a single one. For Christmas, my parents gave the two families of four plus myself tickets. We live in Canada, in Ontario, tickets to a theater production that's only in Pennsylvania. So they covered the cost of the tickets and the hotels and everything else. And then I got told by my sister, by one of them, that the eight of them are going together, and they didn't think it would be a good idea if I went along.
Okay, so I'm going to stop you,
Okay.
right? Because my heckles are getting up for you. First, let's just say this for everyone in the audience. We are pack animals by nature. We love to belong. That is that connection piece that is so important to us as humans. Okay. Sometimes though, we try to belong to a pack that isn't our pack. Okay. And I'm going to use myself as an example here. I have girl cousins on my dad's side that I always thought were like sisters to me. And I still, they're the closest thing I have to sisters. But then I started finding out that these girl cousins were getting together in New York City and going to plays and doing the things and all that kind of stuff. And nobody ever reached out to invite me. And my feelings were a little bit hurt for a minute. And then I thought, well, here's what I'll do. I'll tell them, I'd like to come too, right? I want to be part of your pack, basically. So the last time I saw them was my aunt's funeral last summer. And I said, flights work from Nashville to New York City, just like they do from DC to New York and Boston to New York. So if you need a fourth, please call me. Crickets. Okay. So feeling a little bit like you with your sisters. And then I thought, you know what? Maybe they're not my pack. Who is my pack? And I started listing the people, my very close friends here. So I want to ask you this, Allison. Who is your pack? Who are those people that actually fulfill you rather than set your teeth on edge?
Well, I have a 12-year-old niece. Sounds funny, but
No, beautiful.
she's the love of my life. And it's funny, throughout her life, Well, she has cousins, boy and girl cousins, very close to her age. But if given the choice, she will always pick me. And I love that. I'm a paramedic. I went to school with three girls like 12 years ago, and we have stayed friends. And I would say for so many reasons, those are my people. But we are scattered. Two of us work in the same service, the other two work in another service, but we are divided by about 2 hours. They're married, have kids, and I feel like that's a big part of their lives. They have responsibilities that I don't have, and my big thing is, I can't leave my cats overnight, but that's about it. And so I do find that like
But
wanting,
if you need somebody, if you're like having
yeah.
a really bad day and you're in the
Oh,
fall, who do you call?
my cousin
Your
who
cousin, right?
used
Not
to
your
live, no.
right? And
Yeah.
so you're proving my point here. I think in our brains we expect that sisters and cousins should be the number ones. Sometimes it doesn't work out that way. And as sad as that is, and as much as I wish I was part of that cousin girl pack,
Yeah.
I don't guess I am.
Yeah,
But I
and I
know if
not.
my friend, if I need somebody, my friend Kim, no matter where she is or who she's with, is going to answer my call. She's
Yeah.
going to be my person.
Yeah, that's my cousin.
So that's what I want you to focus on. You have a circle of people that are your pack. And you know, that inner circle is not defined by blood or hair color or sex or gender or anything else. Those are your people.
Yeah.
Okay. And
Okay.
somewhere in those circles, maybe
Excuse me.
somewhere in the outer circles, your sisters and their families are going to fall in, and that's fine.
Yeah.
But just because they're your sisters doesn't mean they're your pack.
Right.
And they don't have to be. You need to develop the pack that fulfills you. Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Kathy.
Does that
It
feel
does.
better?
Yeah.
So tell me why still crying? It's okay.
I'm reading the comments.
Oh, because
They're
everybody loves you.
just so
Everybody's sending you so
sweet.
much love, right? I'm gonna tell you, there's nothing like this No BS Women group. Nothing like it. Because, you know, I don't care if you're having a bad day, if you've, I don't know, pooped your pants, if you're standing on your head, you go in that group and somebody's gonna love on you in a
Yes.
matter of seconds. Somebody's gonna.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone. That's amazing. All right.
So what I'm seeing, I'm seeing tears of, you know, love and affection then, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah.
Really, really important. I want you to really think, maybe you journal about who
Okay.
are my people? Who are those people I know are going to be right there if I need something? Who are those
Yeah.
people that are going to come to me with love and affection and not out of responsibility? That's what I
Yeah.
want you to think about.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you so
All
much.
right. Take
All
care.
right. Thanks.
I feel really strongly about this circle of friends thing, y'all. The more we try to be in a circle that's not our circle, the worse we feel. I totally believe that. I have lived it with cousins, with friends. If you have to force a relationship, no matter who they are, you're not doing yourself any favors. You're just not. All right, Lori, you're next. Here she comes, my friend Lori. Amber says, that was so helpful, Kathy. Thank you. I have this struggle with my sister, and it kills me that it affects my ability to have my relationship with my nieces. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
I raised my hand, took my hand down,
I
booted
know, I
myself
saw.
out.
I was like,
I've been wanting to
is she going to get coached or is she not?
show up for the last couple of months and haven't. I'm sick right now, but
do my best here. I am working, so I'm not on leave. Just to
There's
end the trend here.
always somebody that's going to work, right?
My mom passed in November, and my dad passed in 06, and I was his hospice nurse, and I pulled him into my arms as he took his last breath. And right before he passed, we had a lot of conversations about, well, he said, "You are just like your mother," and it wasn't necessarily a compliment, but it was the like strong-willed, determined, gonna do what I need to do. And he's like, "Don't stop your dreams." So that has been a direction I have worked. I worked my way up through school administration, directors of special ed, assistant principal. And then I realized like I'm missing the work I want to do because schools are so limiting. So I'm just completing my coaching certification for neurodiversity life coach. So all of
Wow.
our ADHDers and anxiety, depression people, hey.
For you.
But when mom passed, it was unexpected. And I've been just flat since. She died on November 6th, and it was really early, early, early in the morning, apparently. She had a massive heart attack, and they didn't get to her. No one found her till after 6 that night. So we didn't get a viewing. So I feel like I never got a goodbye. And I feel like you've already answered all the questions. You're like, journal to someone who's not here. You've already kind of said all the things to do, but I don't know how to take that first step. I'm so angry at the medical system for like her pacemaker and all these issues. I'm angry I didn't get to see her to have that goodbye. I'm angry at myself because I was too busy 2 days prior of that to go up and see her like we had planned. I'm angry with my siblings that the entire funeral eulogy and everything was mine to do. But at the same time, I wouldn't have trusted either of those two to do a damn thing. If it's going to be done right, I'll be the one to do it. And I've just lo deflated, I don't think really grieved yet, but I'm not sure how.
I think you are grieving. I think you're grieving in your way.
I mean, with my dad, it felt like, I cried the day we found when my sister called and said the police just called her and mom was gone. But I knew it 2 hours before when she wasn't answering her phone calls. I knew she was gone. And I cried when I cleaned where she had passed in the bedroom because I didn't want any of the rest of my family to have to do that. And then it's just this like
So
flat. I don't know.
anger takes up a lot of space.
Yeah.
Anger takes a lot of energy. Okay. So when you're not in the throes of anger, you might be recovering from anger. Okay. So I want to offer
Yeah.
that to you. Anger takes a lot of increased energy. And when the anger burns off, your body has to recover from it. So you've mentioned anger quite a bit. So I just wanted to say that about anger. If you're not feeling angry about all these things tangential to your mom's passing, what do you feel? What else do you feel?
Lost.
Lost?
I mean, like a really cool thing happened at work. I've been advocating for something and a new process and was recognized by the, I'll be the only assistant principal working with the directors on the new special ed thing. And she's my like, "Mom, guess what?"
Mm-hmm. So lost because that connection is that's not a physical connection anymore.
Well, and it's there's something about not, I was talking to my sister and my brother and sister and I, a few days after mom died, my brother's like, I'm waiting for mom to walk in here and say, "What did you shits do with all my stuff?" Like, because we didn't see her, though we know there's just that permanence type thing that I'm waiting for a phone call, or I think if I dial her number, she'll be there somehow.
What would you expect to see? Why is the seeing piece so important to you?
I guess because we didn't think this was going to happen. And it wasn't like a car accident where you see the car and, she had been to the heart doctor. She had done all these things and had just gotten like, "You're doing really good." They decreased a med and then gone.
So the C piece, the seeing her piece, would have provided you what?
Realness made it real. I
Okay.
mean, and then I know it's real. I know all that. But there's like this slight disconnect in a way.
Is there a way to repair that without seeing her?
Well, probably that letter thing you were talking about in your opening, the
Maybe.
journaling,
Maybe seeing her name etched in a tombstone. Maybe reading an obituary. Maybe, I don't know. I mean, there are ways to create that certainty for yourself, because it seems like that's what you're missing. Even though you logically know she's gone, there is the piece missing because you were a hospice nurse, maybe, is that the actual viewing of her after she'd passed, right?
She was cremated, her wishes, and we were going to this spring bury her remains with dad and do all that. And I have her sitting on the mantel downstairs, and I've decorated her for every holiday. And my sister's like, "Are you ready? We can make a burial date." And I'm like, "Nope.
What keeps you from
Nope."
being ready for the burial date? How will you know when you're ready?
Right.
What?
Right. Exactly. How will I know? I don't know.
So maybe these are the questions you journal about. How will I know when I'm ready? How can.
Putting her in the ground, like, it's the final thing, which is the closure and all that I might be waiting for, but it also is the permanence. Like, there is no piece of her to come back once that happens. And yes, I have my own little urn and I have a necklace urn thing and all that, but it's just this like symbolic
So
done.
it's interesting to see your brain circle this, because on the one hand, you wish you had actually viewed her body in order to create that certainty. But on the other hand, you're not ready to bury her to create that certainty.
I have a lot of that back and forth.
Isn't that
And
interesting?
then my logical side is like, this needs to happen, you know?
Well, yeah, our logical side is also always going to be very black and white and tell us what to do. Okay. But it's the emotional side most often that we have to care for. in order to honor what we're feeling, so that because you're, I mean, you and I have talked before, you're going to go to anger first for anything, right? You've told me that before. You're going to run hot to anger, right? So that's why I asked you what else is there, because anger is almost like your protection mechanism. You're going to fight, right? That's what nervous, that's that nervous system state. When you get totally dysregulated, you're going to fight back anger. Okay. But this feeling of lost is the one that's looking for the path. It's looking for the certainty. And she didn't get that piece of you, didn't get that on the day your mom died, but she's still looking for it. And you haven't figured out how to give that to her yet.
It's
Right?
interesting you said give that to her versus me.
Well, and the reason I say it that way is there's I know enough about this just to be dangerous, okay? But there's a therapy out there called internal family systems that talks about these different pieces of ourselves, you know, a protector, a rebel, a child, you know? And I really think about that sometimes. And you know, like I talked about my anxiety voice, I think about that as just a part of me that sometimes needs to be comforted. Okay. So if we think about this piece of you, this lost piece of you that sometimes needs to be comforted, needs to be shown the way, then to me that feels I feel very compassionate when I think about her, because it allows me, when I think, you know, if my anxiety piece, it allows me to come in and comfort that piece of me that needs that comfort. So that's why I separated the two. But how does it feel to you? Does it feel weird? Does it feel disconnected? Does it feel, or does
Well,
it feel like, oh, that's an interesting way to think about it?
I think my anger piece comes in as a protection, as you said, because there hasn't been that comfort. I am the comforter. You know, even like it blew me away, mom died and everyone else's life went on, you know, and I'm like, really. People who I thought were really close friends, like, not, hey, how are you doing? Nothing, you know. And I talk to them, and it's all about help me with this and help. So I've distanced myself in some of those things. Like, I don't have it to help you. I'm working on me. And I don't think I do the shutdown anger like I used to. It's more like an injustice. And how to find that balance back.
So,
Go
if
ahead.
we were to assign to you the job of comforting yourself, not relying on others to comfort you, because ultimately that is, I mean, that it is our jobs to take care of
Well,
ourselves first, right?
it has been my job.
Right. And you've done, yeah, you do a pretty good job at that. You just haven't figured out how to do it for this yet.
True.
Right. So if you were to say, you know what, it's my job to comfort that piece of me and not rely on others to, because, you know, here's the thing. Somebody else can come up to you and go, Lori, I am so sorry. How are you doing today? And you'd answer them and everything, but you might not feel comforted because you're just there. That's their words. You have to give yourself those words in order to create that feeling and that care for yourself. Right? So if you were to give this lost piece of you a little bit of attention, what do you think that would look like?
Well, as you were talking, I was thinking that I almost need not the burial, nothing, just my own. Goodbye.
Your own what?
Goodbye.
Goodbye, maybe. Maybe. Does that feel like what you need?
Well, it might be the only way to do it for me. Because even talking about the burial, they're like, well, Lori, what should we do? What are you going to say? What should we plan? Who all should be there? And it's then I'm in like caring for everyone else versus maybe what I need to do with it to be ready to do it with the family.
What would it look like for you to write a letter to that lost piece of you? That piece of you that feels lost.
Yeah.
I'll get it started for you. Okay. And of course, this is Kathy words. These are not Lori words, right?
Yep.
How about saying something like, I know you're in there, and I'm sorry you've gone through this. And I want to help you kind of close the loop on this so that we can not forget mom, but move forward in what we need to do to care for ourselves. I don't want to be
Yeah.
angry anymore. I want to get back to missing her,
Yeah.
missing the experience of caring for myself. You know, maybe it starts that way. You can give her a name, you know, you can say
Yep.
Little Lori or Lost Lori or just, you know, whatever. Okay? But maybe you start thinking about how would you talk to her if she were sitting next to you? How would you talk to her? What would you tell her? What kind of
Yeah.
comfort would you give her? And what use your words? What would that sound like to you? And
That makes
then
sense.
once you're done with that, you could write a letter to your mom. I don't know why this happened. I'm really pissed off about it. We went to the doctor. You had a good pacemaker, blah, blah, blah. Nobody called me, you know, whatever it
Yep.
is. Because I
Yep.
bet by the end of that letter, you're going to be like, I am so sad that you're not here. Right? And just let it flow. And if you just let it flow, I bet after a little bit, it begins to come back together for you. You begin to feel more of the actual grief process rather than this numb that you are.
Yeah.
How are you doing?
That makes sense.
Okay,
Yeah.
I'm gonna offer you one more thing. Okay.
Yes.
I know you've been in coaching before, so I know you know the benefit of it.
Yep.
And this is no pressure, not a sales pitch, not nothing. But Lori, I have an open slot if you want to come back for a month and work on this.
I have thought about that, but my stepson is, along with all of this, has been in a mental health crisis for a year and a half, and we financially support him completely, so
I
there
think.
isn't a penny. Otherwise, I would jump on that in a heartbeat.
I understand.
But I do have it in mind for when things balance a little bit.
Okay. Then make sure you use and ask coaches.
Yeah,
Okay.
that's a good, yep.
And ask for me if you want to and be
Okay.
insistent.
Yep.
Okay. Nobody else answer this. I want Kathy or Lizzie or Lisa or whoever if you want to ask for someone specific. Okay.
Yeah. I've been waiting for this call for you, so you know at all the camps I'm like, Kathy, this, and you like, here's your answer,
Yep.
and I'm like, good, thank you.
You're good. You're good at hitting the people you need in the right order. That's for sure. That's for
Well,
sure.
each coach has such beautiful gifts that
That's
you
right.
gotta
Well,
diversify your.
we are a well-balanced team, that's for sure.
Yep.
That's for sure.
Yep.
All right, you okay?
I am. I am. Thank you.
You're welcome. Can I check on you in a couple of weeks?
For sure.
All right.
Yes. Okay.
If I don't hear from you first, I'm gonna reach out.
Okay.
Okay.
Sounds good.
All right. Take care.
Yep.
Okay. There's a couple of questions here. Let's run through these and then we'll be done. Does handwriting versus typing matter? Yes, I did mention that typing is fine. Handwriting slows you down even more when you're journaling. Voice journaling is fine too. Voice journaling is interesting because you actually hear what you are speaking. So you have engaged another sense. So if you are brand new to journaling, I would pick the easiest thing, the thing that you are most likely to do, and give it a shot. Okay. All right. Mary says, I lost my dad 3.5 weeks ago. I am so sorry. That's so fresh. Sometimes I feel it all. Sometimes I just feel numb and closed off. I'm not even sure how to feel sometimes. It's too much, so I'm avoiding it. Feeling makes it real. Yes, it does. And I don't want it to be real. But other times I know I need to feel it so I can start to heal. So, Mary, what I would offer to you is similar to what we just talked with Lori about. Okay. Maybe you just write a list of feelings at first. Okay. Because grief is like, I think of it like an umbrella. Okay. We all grieve in different ways. All right. Nobody's grief journey is the same. In fact, we'll grieve different people in different ways. Okay. So if you ask yourself, what's underneath my grief umbrella? You might be like Lori and have lost and angry. Or you might be like me and have just real sadness and disconnection. You might be like someone else and have another set of feelings. Just start there. Just name them. Okay. Give them a voice because what your feelings really want is to be heard. Okay. The more you suppress them, the more it's gonna be like, y'all ever heard the analogy of the beach ball? You ever taken a beach ball at the pool and pushed it underwater? You have to hold it there, right? And it takes effort to hold it there. You turn your back on that beach ball even for a second, what does it do? It kabooms. Goes straight up in the air. The harder you hold it there, the further it's going to fly. So just let your beach ball ride the top of the water. And you do that by beginning to name those emotions. Mary, there is a video that Coach Lizzie did on the nervous system resource page that is a really great example of how you acknowledge a feeling. Give yourself permission to feel it for just a minute and then ask yourself, what else am I feeling? Okay, so you might go over there and take a look at that. I think it says processing feelings video or something on the nervous system resource page, which is under the resources menu on the website. Okay, anonymous. I had my son 6 years ago. He underwent open heart surgery as a newborn. I came across an email that contained a picture of him immediately after surgery that a family member took of him. I want to no longer feel that deep sadness and pain when I look at this picture. I want to feel gratitude that a doctor was able to catch his heart defect before it was too late. I'm gonna pause there. There's more. I want to encourage you, Anonymous, to feel both. Okay, because again, feelings are meant to be heard. They are signals. They're signals from our heart, from our body, from our thoughts. It is okay to feel the pain and the gratitude at the same time. Okay? It's almost like when we feel grief, it's because we have loved. All right? So if we decide we don't want to feel the grief anymore, what happens to the love? Right? We're not remembering our person at all. So if you tell yourself, I don't want to feel this pain anymore, you are likely to It would be harder to bring in the gratitude about it because you're not thinking about it at all. Does it make sense? How do I get from feeling pain to feeling grateful? I think I just talked about that. It's almost like they have to both coexist. Right now, when I see his picture, I'm taken back to that day when I endured his 9-hour surgery and months of hospital visits, not knowing if he would survive. So within that is a little bit of a traumatic experience. It's your boy, right? So when you see that picture, the memory comes back. That's what I would expect it to do. But then when the memory comes back, you can wrap it in safety by wrapping gratitude around it. And that would be my suggestion to you. Okay. You can hide the picture away and continue to see the gratitude, but you're going to know where the gratitude came from. And that's okay. It's part of your life experience and his life experience. So I hope that helps. I hope that makes sense. And I'm so grateful to you too, also, that your boy is okay and that his doctors found his defect. It's beautiful. Okay, y'all. I think that's it for tonight. As you heard me say, you know where to find me if you need me as coaches. If it is especially sensitive or targeted or whatever, you can email me at support. You can always tag me in the Facebook group. I tend to look for the posts in the group that need me the most. But if I've missed you, just tag me, okay? All right, everyone. Have a great evening, and I will see you soon. I'll be around. Take care. Bye.